A Nolan Show exclusive now this morning. We can reveal that the PSNI paid out more than $1.1 million in compensation to the public over the past 3 years. Now, over half of the payouts were for what's called wrongful acts by police officers. These include assaults by police, wrongful arrest and wrongful detention. Last year, there were 165 compensation claims settled for wrongful acts, costing more than £549,000. Now, that's a huge increase on the figures from 2016-17, when 68 claims for those wrongful acts were paid out at a total of £155,000. I've been speaking to the Superintendent, John Burrows.
Well, it's important, first of all, to explain that civil compensation that we pay in relation to liabilities that arise is entirely different from police wrongdoing and misconduct. So there are a number of reasons why the police may have to pay compensation, and that we may settle claims. That may be that we've searched a property and there's been inaccurate information about who lives in that property, and we want to make redress for any damage that we've done. And there's a legal channel to do that, and we engage with claimants in relation to that. So there are a number of reasons why the police would pay compensation, and it isn't always the case that that would be in any way reflective of bad policing or unethical policing.
Okay, I understand that. And obviously these figures that we've set out, you know, 155,000, 327,000, 549, that's over 3 years, each of those, they come under a key that the police have given us of AW, which is wrongful acts. And in the explanation from the PSNI, it says assaults by police, unlawful arrest, unlawful detention, etc. So none of them look entirely positive towards why that compensation would be paid out.
Policing is a human endeavour. We have nearly 7,000 police officers dealing with 900,000 calls for service, arresting thousands of people every year, searching thousands of people every year, searching many properties, seizing property. And in the transactions that we conduct, sometimes there are mistakes made, sometimes we have incorrect or impartial information. Sometimes there are human errors, systems errors, and we have to make redress to people who are affected by that. So that's the context upon which we are operating. And it is right and proper that in a accountable police service, that wherever we do something that does have an impact on someone else, that we can be held accountable for that. And where appropriate, we make monetary redress for any injury or damage that we have caused.
And I guess when you, or when I read out that list of potentials behind that AW key, the one thing that stands out is assault by police. Can you be more specific in terms of the number of cases that relate to that from these figures?
No, I don't have a breakdown of the figures in terms of the compensation claims. But it's fair to say that an injury in which we make civil redress for may not actually be what we understand to be a criminal assault. So someone could get injured in our care, and it's appropriate that we pay them compensation.
And that would be classed as assault by police?
That would be, yes, because there's a legal classification of assault in which someone sustains an injury that wasn't their fault, as opposed to a criminal assault.
Can you give us an example then? Because, again, it's difficult when I'm just reading those three words, assault by police, to actually understand what that could mean. So could you give us an example, even a theoretical one, of something that happened that could lead to money being paid out under that wrongful acts?
A police officer has made an arrest, handcuffed a detained person, leading that person out of a house. Say a police officer slips and falls. In the course of that, that detained person got injured. We may make redress to that person for compensation. That is entirely different from an officer using deliberate excessive force or assaulting a person. We may make an arrest in good faith, with good information, have to use force to do that, and find out actually that the information that we received about that person from a third party, for example, was incorrect.
That clarification does help in terms of what this could possibly be, but could it also possibly be simply assaults by the police?
Well, there's a different regulatory framework for dealing with allegations of assault. So if an allegation of assault is made against a police officer, it is referred to the police ombudsman, that independent accountability body that holds us to account. They will investigate that, and that is dealt with as police misconduct. And
would compensation for that police misconduct be included in these figures, or would that be additional?
It could be, but it is, the vast majority of those settlements, which are confidential settlements, relate to purely civil matters. We've had falling levels of complaints for the last 5 years in terms of public complaints to the Ombudsman. In fact, there's a 28% reduction in the last 5 years.
Do you know how many of these, from these figures, relate to stop and search, where people complain about being wrongfully arrested or wrongfully detained?
Yes, there was a specific issue around our use of justice and security search powers. That's the search powers that allow us to deal with the severe terrorist threat in Northern Ireland. There was not a code of practice issued to give guidance to police officers and the public as to how police officers would use those powers. So we have a code of practice for how we use stop and search powers under criminal legislation, but we didn't for terrorist legislation.
So where were you using it wrong?
The very fact that there was no code of practice issued between 2009 and 2013, and we had lobbied for one, but the fact that there was no code of practice for those 4 years, officers were using the search powers in good faith, but actually following a legal challenge, we have settled claims in relation to those searches that we did whilst there was no code of practice.
Who is at fault for not informing the PSNI, the officers, in terms of where the barriers are with those stop and search powers?
Well, I don't want to get in the blame game either. There is now a code of practice in place that was issued by the Northern Ireland Office. We have a code of practice that was in place from 2013 that has resolved this issue. Justice and security powers are linked to the threat situation in Northern Ireland. That's what those powers relate to. We carried out a number of searches in good faith in relation to those powers. We had to settle a number of compensation claims in relation to those searches between 2009 and 2013. 240 of those claims were settled. This is not a matter in terms of disproportionality of stop and search, in terms of the conduct of stop and search. This was a specific legal issue that there was not a code of practice issued, and as a result of that, there was a spike in the number of compensation claims, and they were settled. And that explains why there was a spike in compensation claims settled.
This is 2018-2019.
So there is a lag between and something happening, an encounter with a police officer and a member of the public, and actually a claim being settled.
And that lag is a number of years, basically.
That lag can be a number of years. It can be up to a decade, actually.
Yeah. So this is 2016-17, there were 68 of these AW claims paid. 2017-18, there were 72. And then that spike you refer to in 2018-19, which was 165, which money-wise related to almost £550,000.
And a significant number of those claims related to us settling that specific issue around stop and search on the justice and security legislation where we didn't have a code of practice.
And obviously there's a spike in 2017-18 compared to the year before. You know, the amount of money paid out over doubled. So there is an incline in those figures.
There is. There is a natural flux in this as we do the business of policing on behalf of the community.
So you expect 2019-2020 there to be a dip there, basically?
Well, you've already seen in the figures that we've released, we're seeing a decline in those. We'll see how that pans out.
Well, the figures are up until the 30th of June, and that's a tax year, so that's quite short. In terms of the figures that we've been referring to so far this morning, do you know what the legal costs are? Because I assume that's on top of the actual payouts.
No, the information that we have provided is the information and legal services have manage those claims effectively and wisely and with a view to, you know, minimising the cost of the public purse. And let me make it very clear.
No, but sorry, again, total amount of compensation paid is what it says on this file that you've sent me. So, I again, legal costs to get that compensation paid is on top of that.
Well, some of those cases, Vinnie, are going to be settled in court. Some of them are settled outside of court. So I don't have those figures to hand.
I understand. So you don't have the figures, and that's fair enough. But just to clarify again, there are additional costs for each one of those cases on top in terms of the legal cost to the PSNI.
There could be additional costs in terms of solicitor fees.
Yes.
Other court fees, and some of those will be settled within outside of the court by our staff and legal services branch.
People will be listening this morning and thinking, my goodness, how can something like this happen and police being out there doing their job, thinking that they are doing it within the rules and they're not? You know, there must be someone to blame for this or a structure that is not working and doing what it should have.
We have men and women on the community's behalf delivering policing in often difficult, dangerous, fast-moving and fluid situations, often with impartial information, often having to make quick decisions to keep people safe. You know, I've been an operational police officer for 20 years, and in that time I've seen officers having to enter properties with sometimes limited information.
Is there a problem with that basic information? Because you keep referring to that as well. Is the information or what you're accepting as acceptable information before going into someone's house, for example, has any of that changed?
Vinny, no. We are a learning organisation. Where we can learn, we do. But sometimes we in the police don't have the luxury of time. We've got to make quick decisions to keep people safe.
Officers that are operating today, they're going out to do their job this morning, can they be confident that they are operating under the law and within the rules?
Absolutely. We have high ethical standards in the police service, falling levels of complaints made to the police ombudsman. And I am very confident that 99.9% of our officers, 99% of our interactions are doing the right thing, the right way to keep people safe.
Just finally, obviously, budgets, a lot of pressure on everyone, including the PSNI. So there will be people thinking, my goodness, there are other places that this money, this cash could go to.
Of course, we'd rather spend that £500,000 on frontline policing. It is, out of a £800 million budget, 0.06% of our budget. We're not flippant about that. But all organisations have legal bills. All organisations have compensation claims that they have to settle. And many of them actually were attracted when we were doing our frontline policing work. We want to learn. We want to reduce the amount of compensation we pay. It is, unfortunately, one of the things that an organisation that's accountable in law has to sometimes do.
Listen, thank you very much for your time this morning, Superintendent John Burrows. On the line we have Dolores Kelly from the SDLP, also a policing board member. Good morning to you, Dolores.
Good morning, Penny.
And the former Assistant Chief Constable, Alan McQuillan. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning.
Dolores, your reaction to this, £1.1 million over 3 years.
Well, I think it's right and proper that this amount is scrutinised, and are there any lessons to be learned in how to minimise? Because people will be aghast that such amount of money is paid out in compensation claims for the causes that you have listed. And we should be ensuring that every penny that is made available to the Police Service of Northern Ireland actually is spent on frontline service delivery. And we heard about the necessity for increasing policing across the community, but particularly in County Fermanagh. And I have to say, my thoughts are with Kevin Lunny and his colleagues after listening and watching last night's Spotlight programme that came in to BBC for having carried it. But that aside, there are issues around police performance and their lessons, I'm sure, that need to be learnt, not only about keeping police safe, but about keeping the community safe and about reducing and minimising not only the compensation claims, but the reputational harm that any wrongful arrest or any damage to property can cause within a community and antipathy towards police.
Yeah, Superintendent Burrows, he explained that there were a lot of settlements in respect to those stop and search operations that were ruled unlawful. So this is a very costly remedy, Dolores Kelly.
It is, and the policing board is looking with our new human rights advisor much more closely, following our previous human rights advisor's report on stop and search and how the different powers are used across Northern Ireland. And it is something that I do believe merits much closer examination by members of the policing board and greater accountability to the board from chief officers in terms of how powers are used. We recently met with the independent commissioner from England in relation to stop and search and how those powers are used, and the particular powers in terms of legislation, Justice and Security Act. And we all know from our own history how stop and search can, if badly used and overused, can have a real adverse impact on confidence and faith in police by local communities.
Alan McQuillan?
So there's something which is a real priority for the police
okay.
board.
Let's bring Alan in at this point.
I agree completely with what the Lord said. And in my experience in the past, the policing board, and if you look at the policing board's records, the policing board has always been all over the sort of stuff like Irish. They go into great detail in these, and they hold the senior team at the police to account for what they're doing and what they're doing to control this. So I can fully support what Dolores said. This is one of the areas where the policing board really show their teeth at times.
In terms of confidence in the PSNI, Alan, Dolores kind of hinted towards it there. This will not do a lot to try and encourage that, boost that confidence.
Well, I would say to people, it depends on the critical issue is, what were these things for? First of all, if it's alleged that police officers assaulted people, then that's clearly wrong. The police ombudsman investigates that. If the police ombudsman finds a police officer has assaulted one, they can face either a criminal penalty or a disciplinary penalty. But there are situations you're going into that are very violent situations. You're trying to protect life, you're trying to protect people, and during the course of that, people get hurt in ways that weren't intended. So, for example, if you're breaking up a large-scale fight, even in the most basic thing on the street, or you're trying to arrest something, you may inadvertently cause some injury to people that wasn't intended, or you may, alternatively, you may cause damage. And that's not intentional, but it's caused with good intent by the police officer trying to do their job.
Yeah, and those wrongful acts that were included, they do also include assaults by police and wrongful arrests, but no breakdown has been provided of those to us. Lawrence Kelly, will you be seeking more clarity from the PSNI on that?
Yes, we will. I mean, it is something that we need to be concerned about and are concerned about. And obviously, we want to ensure that the police are safe. And I mean, Alan's right to point out some of the horrendous situations that police officers often find themselves in. And I do welcome the frank nature of Superintendent Burrell's interaction with yourself in his interview. However, that doesn't negate the responsibility of the policing board and indeed senior officers to ensure that if there are any lessons to be learned from any of these adverse incidents, whether it is in training and in approaches and indeed in checking the calibre of the information for Superintendent Burrows referred often to the accuracy of the information and how it played an important role in terms of the subsequent police action. So I do think there's a chain of events that needs to be properly scrutinised to minimise the risks to everyone involved and obviously the cost to the public purse ultimately.
Sorry to talk over you, Dolores. We're just getting close to the news at 10 o'clock. Alan, just referring back again to Superintendent John Burrows and what he referenced, the intelligence, the information they are given that sometimes obviously is incorrect, it might lead to them searching the wrong home. Are there questions to be asked about that intelligence and about the level that it's set up before they act on it?
Well, not necessarily. For example, you may arrest someone involved in a crime and you may believe there's evidence of their address. They give you a completely false address and you have no other information to go on but that. You go and search those premises. They're empty.
But that could then lead to compensation paid out from public funds as a result.
Yeah, and that could lead to compensation to the householder paid out. I've seen a situation too where, in my own past experience years ago, chasing an offender who runs through the front door of a house and out the back. You follow him, climbing over a brick wall. The whole brick wall collapsed with him and deposited him at my feet. Immediately, we call in a civil representative to go and make an arrangement with the householder to have the damage all repaired.
Okay. We're out of time, I'm afraid. Alan McQuillan, thank you very much. And Dolores Kelly, thank you as well.